and gentlemen, welcome to this here fish frying podcast brought to you by eejournal.com. I'm Amelia Dalton, and folks, if you haven't heard, the biggest news around the EE campfire this week is a rumor that Intel is buying Altera. Yes, I said Altera. One of the two big dogs of the field programmable gate array business. Now, one would first ask the question, why? Why is this a rumor? Why is this so important? Why the heck did so many other high-tech publications completely miss the mark on this one? I mean, really, guys, pretend like you know what you're talking about just for a second. All right, let's break it down. Intel was, for years, and still is to some extent, solidly in the PC processor business. But, as we all know, that business is now, well, stagnant at best. And Intel certainly isn't going to crack the ARM stronghold on the mobile processor market anytime soon. So, where else would be a good market to attack? How about a market that's rapidly expanding? A market that the world has an increasing need for, obviously not PCs, and a market where they can take the lion's share with their high-end processors without ARM nipping at their heels. Data centers come to mind? They should. Okay, data centers, here they came. Yes, Intel is already dominant in data center applications with something like a 90% market share, but we'll get to more of that later. Oh yeah, and let's talk about power consumption for a second. Did you know that some experts estimate that data centers will use as much as 10% of the world's power? So every time you go searching on that missing One Direction member, you're dimming the lights in your house. Or at least tell your daughter that. Anyway, what kind of technology could possibly help us out with both the heavy lifting performance needed for tomorrow's data centers while cutting our power consumption? Yep, there you go. Good old FPGAs. But why? Why buy out a $2 billion company to do this? Why not partner? Heck, it's not like they're going to add much to Intel's $50 billion revenue, right? Well, that's a bit short-sighted. This isn't all about short-term revenue. It's about foothold. Remember when I said they're already dominant in data center applications? They need the whole kit and caboodle to keep a strong foothold in one of the biggest processor markets the world has ever seen. And well, there's Altera, with their OpenCL framework that runs the FPGA engines, the engineers who know their stuff at the wheel, and who also has been working with Intel as their fab for their smaller geometries for quite a while now. Seems like a pretty darn good fit. Now, folks, big disclaimer here. This is just a rumor. Don't be surprised if it comes true in the next weeks or, heck, months. Sometimes these things take a while to shake out. But if you want more information about the who, what, where, and most importantly, why of this Intel buying Altera deal, I strongly encourage you to check out a co-authored piece by Kevin Morris and Bruce Kleinman published on eejournal.com this week entitled Intel Plus Altera. What would it mean? Also, as a side note, I must say that Kevin Morris did totally call this one almost 9 months ago, when we published an article called When Intel Buys Altera. Yeah, back in June of last year. If you want to check out either or both of these very interesting articles, I've included two links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page on eejournal.com. If Intel buys Altera, you know what they're going to need a whole lot of? High-speed connectors. of course. REE World doesn't turn at all without a connector getting us somewhere else. My guest this week, bringing the Flexi back, is Joe Dombach from Molex. We're talking about high-speed interconnects. We're talking about the fancy world of connectors and a little bit about miniature shipbuilding. Check it out. My guest today is Joe Dombach from Molex. Thank you so much for joining me today, Joe.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so first off, probably everyone in my audience worth their salt knows that you guys make connectors and cables. But the thing about connectors and cables is they are super important. Every design needs them. Let's face it, they're kind of boring. Now, how do you guys get engineers' attention?
Well, cables and connectors may be boring to those that don't need them, or those whose livelihood depends on getting the right connectors and the right cables. Now they suddenly become more interesting. And there's a whole community of people, both those that design and develop the products, as well as procurement people and engineers at customers, at component engineers, that deal with all the issues, the ins and outs of the cables and connectors. It's become actually a very challenging space, especially in light of the high-speed requirements we see today. I primarily work on I/O connectors. And those speeds have gone up dramatically over the last 10 years. And with I/O connectors, there's really quite a high degree of complexity. You have to make a connector. In other words, you have to have it hook up and stay hooked up, you know, and that's the connector piece. But with an I/O connector, we've also got to be very careful today about EMI. You have to be able to conform to FCC. There's no worse problem for an OEM than get his fine piece of equipment in that lab ready to go to market the next day and fail, because that stops them dead in their tracks, and they can't really test per FCC requirements until they have a completed product. We can't test a connector and a cable and show that it'll conform. You know, we do qualitative testing. We compare different things and come up with improvements, but we still can't always project exactly how it's going to work in a piece of equipment. And really, the high speed portion, we dig so deep into signal integrity today. There's something of a beauty contest where competitors will show their curves, insertion loss, return loss, crosstalk, and we study these curves and use that curves to infer whether the connectors are going to be adequate in terms of signal transmission. And quite honestly, I think the specs that we look at are somewhat conservative, because we've been able to have buffers in terms of the real performance of the connectors at the slower speeds, like 10 gig, even maybe a little at 25, but speeds keep going up, and we're going to end up honing everything to the nth degree to get some of these longer term, very high speed systems to run. And I think we'll achieve a much deeper understanding what all the different components in the link have to do. Molex has kind of rededicated themselves actually to be a complete solution supplier. And we're looking at the channel more now than ever, more than we ever have. We do a lot of channel modeling. So we're interested in everything from chip to chip, through the board, through the connector, through the cable, back through a connector, and back through a board to the next chip. So we really work on all that. We drive a lot of innovation, too, in our space. I mean, we've become leaders in I/O. I've been involved with new product development and driving basically all the high-speed I/O development at Molex for the last 10 years. And we've really become leaders in this space. Well, I've been doing connectors for 40 years. And I don't think they're boring.
Okay, so Joe, with all this multi-gigabit SerDes going on, connectors and cables have gotten really hard, haven't they? Signal integrity is no joke.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of our biggest challenges. There's really two challenges that I'll point out. And one I'll just describe. If you'd picked Molex up, call it 12 years ago, and shook it really hard, two EEs would fall out. One would be in reliability, and one would be in advanced development. If you pick Molex up today and shake it really hard, there's going to be 50, 60 people on the floor. We've greatly increased our staffing in the area of signal integrity. It's also very challenging to meld the mechanical skills, because connectors were classically mechanical stuff. We'd stamp metal, we'd mold plastic, we'd make nice assembly machines to put everything together. The electrical characteristics beyond DC characteristics, like current carrying capacity, you know, dielectric breakdown, we didn't worry about signal integrity at all. Well, now it's everything, at least in my space, and with everything I do, high-speed I/O, we sell ZQSFP, ZSFP, it's all implementing very high-speed Ethernet, fiber channel, protocols like that, SAS. It's very critical that we understand the signal integrity performance of the product, that we simulate it very carefully as part of our design process, and then we're putting a lot of effort into correlating it to actual test data, because there's always variation. And if you don't have a correlated model, it's very difficult to use the model to fix things or improve things, because you don't know if your foundation is right. You know, you build the house and half the foundation's not there and the house falls over. So it's become a much more complex business because of that, but it also makes it a lot more interesting.
Okay, so this high-speed serial and signal integrity used to be just a problem for those communications guys, right? But it's starting to become everywhere, like you mentioned, isn't it?
Yes, I think we deal with so many customers, and maybe that's because that's the space and those who happen to be the customers I call on. Data center people, even some of the large, especially the large social media folks, you know, the Facebooks, Amazon, people like that, all the social medias that I don't get involved with, but they have massive computing capability, massive storage capability. Latency is a big issue for them. Speed of access for information. They want it instantly. And demand for bandwidth, if you look at bandwidth demand in aggregate, it's grown at almost an exponential pace for the past 20 years. And it's going to just continue to grow. Even through the, you know, the drop in 2000 and things like that, the internet crash, etc., bandwidth went right through it. Demand did not change. Some of the companies supplying it had a few issues, but the normal user still wanted more and more access to information and Facebook and whatever. So I don't foresee that changing anytime in the future at all. It's just going to continue to increase.
I think you're right, Joe. Now, a little off the cuff question here. You told me you recently got a wooden boat kit, how to make a small wooden boat in your house. Now, how many hours have you toiled away on this project so far? Tell me about the process.
I actually got this kit for Christmas, and it's to build a Spanish galleon, the San Juan, miniature galleon, right? I had always been interested in sailing boats, the old clipper ships and things like that, USS Constitution, old Ironside. My son heard me talking of these things, and him and his girlfriend went in and bought me a San Juan. It's an, apparently a lot of these models get built in Italy. And it's beech wood and walnut, and you build a frame for the ship. You have to lay planks for the hull. You have to lay planks for the deck. You do all the rigging. I've got, since Christmas, maybe 30 hours into it, and all it is a frame with some decks and some planking. But I find I've always loved that kind of model, especially the rigging. I don't know why, I just like it. I like the meticulousness of it. It's relaxing. It takes your mind. And I'm a big rock and roll fan, right? I play electric guitar and I read a lot too. But I find listening to classical music while working on this ship to be just very relaxing. It really just takes you out of yourself.
I like it. Well, Joe, next time you're on my show, I'm going to ask you about that electric guitar business. Well, I think that's all I have time for this week. Thank you so much for joining me. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, you can also join our circle on Google Plus. We also have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal, chocked full of all kinds of techie videos, our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. And while you're there, you should really subscribe to our YouTube channel. That way, each and every episode of Chalk Talk and any of the other super cool geeky videos EE Journal has to offer will be delivered right to your inbox. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can also grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of April 3rd, 2015, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.